The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Having a financial plan is important for when you retire or maybe when something unforeseen happens. Recent research has shown that 60% of small and medium-sized businesses do not have a succession plan in place. You wonder why. They haven't planned for what could be a very expensive future for those who inherit. What are the benefits of having a plan in place? Can you avoid paying the taxman so much money? And what about insurance and business protection? Can you get that and put it in place for the unforeseen? Well, I'm joined now by David Quinn, Managing Director of InvestWise Financial Planning. David, good morning.
Morning, Pat. Nice to be back on the show.
Now, David, the question is, 60% of businesses don't have a succession plan. Does that mean that 40% of them actually do and are doing the wise thing?
Yeah, it does, effectively. 40% have some sort of a plan in place. And then, you know, there's a whole range of strategies that have been put in place. Some of those are very minor plans that might just include a pension or something like that. And some are very elaborate plans with trusts and gifting and wills and holding companies and all sorts of complicated structures. So, I thought it was quite encouraging that at least 40% had thought this long into the future.
One of the worries, of course, maybe not for those who pass on, because they won't be worrying about anything, but those who are likely to inherit, and then they suddenly find, in the case, say, of a simple house that they're not living in, that they have to sell the house in order to pay the tax on the asset. And I'm sure that applies in business as well.
That's exactly the problem. It's when something unforeseen happens where there isn't a plan that they... cash flow can be a problem in paying the tax, because the revenue want their cut and they want it pretty quickly. So it's not a case of, you know, doing a deal with them to delay the payment of the tax over 10 or 20 years. Sometimes they want the full inheritance tax bill paid quickly, and it can force the sale of a property, or it can force the sale of a business, or some businesses might even wind up because they just can't afford the implications of a sudden shock. And that's very unfortunate. And that does happen in a lot of cases.
So you could have a situation where somebody, for example, has the family home and maybe they're planning for that, but they also have a holiday home somewhere down in West Cork or whatever, and the family expect to be able to enjoy that after the parents have gone to their reward, and then suddenly they find they owe so much tax on it that they have to flog it and can't enjoy it at all.
Yeah, that can happen, or in other circumstances where the only asset that's being split among a number of siblings is a property, and maybe one of the siblings wants to live in it, and they have to go and get a mortgage to effectively buy out the other siblings, or to pay the tax. It can be a combination of both of those issues, depending on the value of the property and the inheritance tax thresholds and all the rest of it. But what we always say to people in business, we have a lot of business owners as clients, and we've just opened a Cork office, so we're working a lot with farms where this is a particularly big issue, is the best way to deal with this is to have an open and frank discussion as early as possible, to talk through what everyone wants. Firstly, what the parents or the business owners want, and then conversely, what the siblings want and how they see it progressing. And that plan, you can't start that discussion too early. And that's an emotive subject and a difficult one to broach.
How do you pass on, say, a farm, a property? And there could be a house on the farm, or there could be a number of houses on the farm if a number of family members are working the farm. How do you pass that on? I mean, does the revenue separate dwellings from productive land, and are they treated differently?
Yeah, they can be. And there's obviously there's the old chestnut of the road frontage and sites on a farm that may have value as residential sites. But if we start with just how it's valued, there is a very generous traditionally, obviously, the farm would have been passed on to the eldest son, and that would have been it. And they would have worked the farm and the rest of the family would have got whatever other assets were there. Nowadays, with farms becoming much more business-like, I think it's treated slightly differently. And there is a very, very generous tax relief for farms where if 80% of the value of the total property is considered agricultural, so when you're saying that there might be other properties, if we start with just the point that the farm, 80% of the value of the land and buildings and site is agricultural, then there is a 90% tax relief on the value for the person who inherits it, so that the value is reduced by 90%, and then they pay inheritance tax on the remaining 10%. Mm. There's a whole load of tests. It has to be what they call an active farmer test. Now, this applies just as much to other businesses. It's very similar to business relief, where the person who inherits the farm or the business is expected to continue to work on the farm or in the business for 6 years. The only difference with the farm is that they can actually lease the farm out. And if it's farmed commercially by someone else under a lease full time, then they still get the relief. So that's a very generous relief. And obviously the government want these family businesses being passed on to the next generation. They don't want them just winding up.
What about other small and medium-sized enterprises, be they limited company or maybe sole traders who run a business? You know, it might be a plumbing business where someone then has their son come in or daughter to continue the plumbing business. How are they treated in tax law for inheritance purposes?
Yeah, so it's very similar to that agricultural relief, in that if they... The owner of the business has to have been in the business for 5 years before this relief applies. But if a son or a daughter comes in to start running it, they get the 90% relief on the value of the business assets being transferred to them. So again, they'll just pay inheritance tax or capital gains tax, inheritance tax for them on 10% of the value. Hmm. And then once they don't sell the business on again for 6 years, there's no clawback on that. They get the full relief. If they inherit it and sell it the following year, some of that relief will be clawed back by the revenue.
Now, what about someone who's not related to the person who leaves the business to them? You know, the trusty foreman who's done the work all over the years, and the owner of the business dies and no one else is claiming the estate, and that trusty foreman, no relation, is given the business by will. What happens then? Do they get the same 90% benefit?
Yeah, actually, I'm not 100% sure what happens. It's such a rare occurrence for someone to be gifted a business who isn't a family member, because 75% of these businesses in Ireland are owned, family owned, so they tend to be passed on. But I imagine that the same 6-year clawback rules apply. And obviously, there's no inheritance tax threshold for those, for a stranger.
Yeah,
that, you know, their full inheritance tax liability would apply.
Now, in terms of selling businesses, there was a call for the government to reduce the capital gain to try and get people to move businesses on. What is the situation at the moment? What is the rate of capital gain?
Well, the normal capital gains tax rate that would apply whether you buy Ryanair shares or sell a business is 33%. But they did introduce entrepreneurs relief a few years ago, which has reduced that rate to 10% for certain qualifying directors who've been full-time working directors in the business. And that relief is up to a value of $1 million. So, you know, if you sell a business and you qualify under entrepreneurs relief, you'll pay 100,000 of capital gains tax on the proceeds, which is the rate is very generous. It's nice, and it's attracting entrepreneurial activity. I think the threshold of $1 million, I could see that going up higher. It's 10 million in the UK, for example. And it would probably bring a lot more entrepreneurs in under the net and attract more international entrepreneurship here. But it's a great start for business owners.
What about people then who maybe simply want to retire the business? You know, you're the plumber, you've got a very good active business, but at a certain stage you say enough is enough. I want to shut down my business. And there might be assets in that business. How are they treated?
Yeah, absolutely. So the two big reliefs for business owners are entrepreneurs relief, which I've just mentioned, and retirement relief. Retirement relief applies from 55 onwards for business owners, and they don't necessarily have to retire from the business. It's different in that they don't have to sell their shares. They just get 750,000 tax free, and that's that 750,000 applies to what are called relevant business or relevant trading assets. So it wouldn't apply to cash or investments necessarily there in a company, but it does apply to the business value. And between 55 and 65, that's 750,000 tax-free, which is very generous. It comes down to 500,000 from 65 onwards. So I guess it's an incentive for the original business owner to move on before 65 and pass it on to whoever.
Now, recently, because of COVID, we've seen a number of cases in the courts about insurance because the insurers claimed that they weren't insuring against COVID risks. And the plaintiffs were saying, oh, yes, you were. And that some of them have been resolved in favour of the plaintiffs and others, I'm sure, are ongoing. Mm. What kind of insurance can you get in a business for unforeseen events?
Yeah, it's probably an understood topic. But when we talk to business owners, particularly where there's a number of families involved, maybe there's two directors who own 50% of a business each. And we like to see those business owners put shareholders agreements in place where there's a plan for what happens if one or other of them gets seriously ill or passes on. And in those cases, the spouse will inherit their shares in the business, and that may not be the desired outcome for the other director. They may just want a clean break. But they may also not be able to afford to buy the shares back from the spouse. So co-director's insurance puts effectively life insurance in place that the business takes out on each of the two directors or three or multiple directors. And it pays a life insurance policy into the life insurance proceeds into the business that's used to buy out the surviving spouse. So the surviving spouse gets looked after, and there's no cash flow problems, and the business gets to continue on. And it can be incredibly cheap. I was looking at the numbers earlier, for a 45-year-old to take out €500,000 of cover, when commissions and all that stuff is stripped out of a life insurance policy, it's about less than 60 quid a month. And that gives very good peace of mind for the business owners and for the surviving spouse and family. And
clearly the older you are when you take this policy out, the more expensive it's going to be.
Every year that someone gets older, the premium goes up a little bit because the risks are slightly higher. But that can be mitigated by stripping out commissions on these things. When these things are sold by the banks, they can be, 30% more expensive. So the savings can be material for someone if they shop around or talk to advisors who charge a fee instead of just selling product. But it's a very valuable insurance to have.
Yeah. I mean, you're in favour of people getting proper financial advice and paying for it rather than, going to places where you're told it's OK, the insurer or whatever will pay us the commission. You don't have to worry.
Yeah, well, like, my view, Pat, on this, that people are paying for it either way. So a co-director's insurance policy over 15 years, the savings with the commission gone is about $7,000 over that period of time. So paying a good fee where a financial planner will make a good profit on it, it's still a huge saving for people. And you multiply that up to all the other products we end up taking out, it can be in the tens of thousands.
Some of the comments coming in. Our family farm was put into a company in the 1970s to avoid a big inheritance tax. But that company status is now an awful headache a couple of generations later. We can't divide up the land. We can't sell any or gift to children as it's a company asset and it can't therefore be simply gifted. We're coming up against endless dead ends trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah,
can they extract it out of the company? Do they have to buy it out of the company, the land,
So effectively, the company owns the assets. So the family members would have to buy into shares in the business, or the company would have to liquidate assets and then pay out dividends or income to the family members. It depends on whether the family members are directors of the business, of the company or not. There's a lot of complications there. And this is why it's so important to plan well in advance and maybe have a holding company over the trading company so that can have multiple family shareholders or a family partnership can work very well in those cases as well, depending on the value. But once these structures are set up, it's hard to unwind them.
As Ed has a comment to make, inheritance tax is unfair double taxation since what most people pass on to their kids has already had a lifetime of tax paid on it. And I thought Leo was proposing to scrap it. What happened to that idea, asks Ed. He may have been talking about scrapping it for average priced homes, but not scrapping it entirely. But it is this whole concept of that the tax man just looks at any unearned income and says, I'll have some. Thank you.
And let's face it, these capital taxes, they're not going to go away. All of this government support for COVID and all the borrowing that has been going on is going to have to be paid for somewhere. And I have a sneaking suspicion that these kind of easy capital taxes could go up rather than come down, because they do seem to be an easy target for raising money.
Now, something you said in passing about inheritance tax, that the taxman needs it and needs it now. Thank you very much. But one of our listeners wants to know, is there any circumstance in which you can pay inheritance tax in installments? Do they ever agree to that?
Well, I haven't seen it, but I imagine that in really difficult circumstances, the revenue tend to, you know, allow some flexibility on these things. And actually, to be honest, at the moment, with the length of time it's taking for probate to be processed generally in the country, and the probate has to be processed before the tax calculation starts, so that can delay things dramatically as well.
Yeah. Okay, a final question, David. How are gains on Bitcoin taxed? Is it 33% or 40% capital gain?
It's 33% capital gain on the from the price of the purchase of Bitcoin to the price that they sell at. 33%. There's no income in Bitcoin. It's purely a speculative asset. So it's all under capital gains tax.
Okay. And a final one. I want to give my daughter some of her inheritance now so she can use it to buy a home. Will this be taxed?
Okay. So if it's a big immediate gift, there won't be. The only way they would be taxed is if it went above the 335,000 threshold. But if they gift under the annual small gift exemption of €3,000 per person, it doesn't even get included in the thresholds for inheritance tax. So I always recommend people use that first in whatever way they can. And then after that, you only have to start declaring your inheritance when you're at 75% of the threshold. And the tax is only paid when you go above the threshold.
That's all very interesting. David Quinn, Managing Director of InvestWise Financial Planning. David, thank you very much for joining us.